In our last segment, Samin Yahagi talks with Iranian filmmaker Shireen Nashat about her new film, Women Without Men.
این حق منه که برم یه زن دیگه بگیرم. پس بهتر سرکار خانوم
دیگه بسه.
The stunning debut film shows how the liberation of Iranian women parallels the liberation of Iran. Women Without Men won the Silver Lion Award for Best Director at the Venezia Film Festival.
My name is Samin Yahagi and I'm here in our studio with Shireen Nashat. Shireen is a visual artist living in New York, and she's in the Bay Area for the opening of her groundbreaking new film, Women Without Men. Shireen, thanks for being with us on Women's Magazine.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with how do you express in words art as an artist?
The imagination of artists is a way to cope with the world and with our human existence, really. For me, it's been a way to cope with my own sort of anxieties and issues as a human being, as a woman. So it's helped me through life, and somehow it turned into a dialogue, having a conversation with others as well. Artists are in some ways are there to inspire, to provoke people's thinking and feeling. And, you know, art is not only therefore serves a purpose on personal levels, but it also can become an incredible tool of communication about important psychological, emotional, social, political issues. So I think artists play a great role.
How do you live the life of an artist?
I just try to be as honest as I can be. I think it's very difficult to separate the artist from the artwork that the artist produces. And therefore, I think the art sort of embodies the inner lives of an artist in a way that that tries to be so naked and vulnerable and allows the viewer to see through this nakedness their own vulnerability as human beings. So it creates a really wonderful a way of communication. The only thing is that it only happens when you're really, truly honest.
How does the artist's lifestyle relate to the artist's political, aesthetic, spiritual concerns?
Well, I can speak for myself that, for example, my own nomadic lifestyle, the fact that I've never been centered in one place, I've had to live outside of my own country, this kind of hybrid sort of exilic life situation has been really very reflective in my own work. In terms of the work, it's always about all sorts of paradigms, paradoxicals, duality, that it's always standing between East and West, Occident and Orient, you know, United States and Iran, Islam and Christianity. And so I really feel that the way my lifestyle work as an Iranian artist living in New York, yet addressing important sociopolitical, religious issues of my country, somehow embodies how I live my lifestyle.
Are there specific elements you use in your art that come from Iranian culture and traditions?
Oh, yes. My work is very much rooted in the tradition of poetry in Iran. I think Iranian people for years and years have felt most comfortable with the poetic language, metaphoric, allegorical expression, because it's been a way to sort of transcend the censorships that we've had over and over again. And even though I live outside, somehow I feel most comfortable to convey my ideas in that poetic tradition. Also, visually speaking, just in aesthetic level, I think my work borrows from classic Islamic and Persian art in the sense of beauty and harmony and symmetry. And yet, it's also very Western. But I think that it's sort of a modern readaptation of classic Islamic art.
Talk about a modern readaptation of Islamic art.
Well, I think that, you know, there are certain elements that it sort of is dormant in an artist's mind, in the artist's subconscious, but they're there. For example, intuitively, as I grew up in Iran, my eyes are so used to looking at certain iconographies and decorative motifs. And for example, just to be more specific, the question of the incorporation of text and image, which you see over and over again in the Persian miniature paintings, in the carpets, in the ceilings, in the architecture, in the Islamic architecture, in all kinds of things. So when you look at my work in the way that it's always about incorporation of text and the image, the photographs of women of Allah, and that in a way that the literature always informs the image. It's that itself is an immediate representation of how my work tries to expand on the classic form of Islamic art.
So let's go to the movie. The movie addresses a democratic movement in Iran. First, let's talk about what do the words freedom, democracy mean to you? How do they differ in an Iranian context from an American context?
Yes, it's a very good question because I think it's really difficult to convey this notion of freedom on the very deepest level to the American community because there is so much freedom of expression in this country. And so I think you can never overemphasize what the idea of freedom means for Iranian people and for the women of Iran. And so I try to address this both on individual, a personal, psychological, emotional level for women in Iran, and also the question of freedom for the country of Iran and how, you know, poetically speaking, how the woman and the country of Iran share the same ideal over and over again throughout Iranian history, always looking for an idea of independence and democracy in relation to the circumstances, the crisis that they have. And so I, in this film, Women Without Men, really I think that's the central theme to explore that very interesting parallel that the woman again and the country share.
Identity is important in your work. How do you see your own identity?
Well, without being over analytical about it, I think my identity obviously reflects the life that I've lived in a way that now I have lived longer in the United States than I've lived in Iran. And I am an embodiment of this kind of exilic, nomadic reality of people who are removed from their center. And they're sort of conflicted in between, in their values, in their behavior, in their looks, in every dimension of their being. They are representative of some type of a hybrid. I am very much emotionally Iranian, but rationally I'm very American.
So you, as an Iranian woman whose childhood and adolescence was shaped, touched by Islamic culture with a touch of modernity, particularly in the urban area and between middle and upper middle class Iranians, within this context, how do you relate to the Western image of the Iranian woman, Muslim, veiled, submissive?
Well, I think throughout the beginning of my career, although my work was not really trying to be a big statement, or I never claimed to be kind of an ambassador or the speaker of Muslim women, nevertheless, my monologue turned into a dialogue. And in that respect, I found myself in a conversation with the world in a way that it depicted and tended to reduce and make stereotypes about Islamic women. And I think in some ways, I think my art or work like mine can help to reduce the stereotypes or help to educate some of the misperceptions. For example, that you cannot speak about all Muslim women as one, because every country who's Islamic practices and Islam differently and treats women very differently according to their own traditional political orientation. Therefore, you cannot compare Iranian women with Palestinian women or Turkish women or Egyptian women. It is impossible. And that, unfortunately, is the first misstep by the Western audience. The second thing is this, as explained, there is this eternal image of Muslim women as submissive, as victims. And what I try to do in my work, which is, I think, the truth, is to show how opposite it is, at least again within the Iranian community, that they are not losers. They're very strong and defiant.
Talk about the choice of the book, Women Without Men, and what made you work on this book?
Well, as I was saying earlier, my interest has always been how to make art that sort of explores both the inner and outer world of people. And if you think about the human body, what goes on in our imagination inside of our mind, it's really different than what is our body saying on the outside. Women Without Men, it's precisely that kind of structure where when you are in the orchard, you enter a universe that it's almost like the inner mind of human beings. Your imagination, a universe that you create, that you're yourself the god, and that you can drop your shields, you can be secure, you can, it's a sanctuary, you're in a place of exile, you have time off, and then you go to the city of Tehran, where you're really inundated with reality, history, politics. And I thought that was a great poetry in terms of, you know, while looking at the woman, the four women that are on a journey to find transformation, are courageously going, leaving behind their difficult lives to look for an idea of change, while you're also exploring the country of Iran in the city of Tehran as it too going through major crisis and is looking for an idea of change.
Do you want to talk a little bit about the movie?
Yeah, I explain a little. The film is really an allegorical film. It's a magic realist novel written by Shahnush Parsipur, who, by the way, the book was banned immediately, and she was in prison for nearly 6 years one time. I mean, not for this book, but generally she's very damaged. Artist has paid a great price. But generally it follows the life of four women, I dropped the fifth character, as they each run away from very difficult past. And each woman comes from a very different socioeconomic class, which really is very helpful for us to get a great picture of that, the dynamic of that society at that time, the upper class, middle and lower class. And they each leave their troubled lives, whether it's sexual or relationship or religion or whatever, and they mysteriously converge in a very beautiful orchard in the countryside. In this countryside, at least the three of them try to create their own utopian society, where once they enter, they don't see the wall anymore, and they are, for a change, very happy together for a brief moment. But what's interesting is once they get inside, they are, you know, I'm sort of cut off from the outside world, but now they're dealing with orchard becomes like a mirror. Now they have to look within. And it's very interesting what happens there. On the other hand, one woman who's actually dead as a suicide, but, you know, allegorical character, she's resurrected and now goes back into experiencing the political process. But at the end of it all is now this, again, the way in which the country's crisis develops and the struggle of the people and the way that the struggle and the plight of women develops, and they all converge at the end together.
Talk about historical time when the movie takes place. And do you see parallels politically between the 1953 and the current time?
Yes, when we thought about expanding that part of the story in the novel by Shahnush Parsipur, which you only mentioned it as a background, I could not have predicted that things would have unraveled the way they did in the streets of Tehran in 2009 in the summer. In fact, as we were closing the edit, the election happened. But what's very, very interesting is by returning to the period of summer 1953, when CIA succeeded to overthrow Dr. Mossadegh's government, you see, in fact, the destabilization of Iranian politics and eventual paving of the Islamic Revolution, it's all rooted in this pivotal moment of our history. And that history has a way of repeating itself. And for selfish reasons, outside of the political issues, that I think there's an incredible amnesia about this summer of 1953, both by Americans and Iranians, even after all the debate since September 11th about the conflict between Iran and the Middle, you know, and the U.S., I think culturally this period speaks to the Westerners and to the Iranian people to remind us what Iran was before the Islamic Revolution, what a cosmopolitan and secular society we were. We were not a religious society forever. So I think this period, going back to it, serves a great purpose, both culturally, politically, for the Iranians and non-Iranians.
Do you feel any connection with any of these women characters?
Absolutely. It's funny because I think the author, in a way, you know, she shaped these characters according to herself, and then I took the woman from her and shaped them according to myself. I think what's very interesting is that the four women that I have here, their issues, their problems are absolutely universal, first of all, that are not just being Iranian. But Fakhri, for example, a woman who reaches 50 and she's still likes to start life over again. She still wants to be an individual. She wants to be free. She wants to be loved. She wants to be admired. So it's both her vanity and narcissism, but this really sense of growth, even at a certain age where you're supposed to be over the hill. I think I identify with that, the way that I moved from art making to filmmaking at the age of 50 something. With Muniz, her aspiration for political activism, the cry for social justice, it's a part in me that is always feeling like I'm an activist and I want to continue on that. I believe in things that are outside and bigger than myself. And with Zarin and her obsession with her body, in the sense that she self-mutilates herself, in the way that she punishes herself for everything that is wrong about the world, in the way that she never feels like she fits on the planet, she's a lonely sort of an outcast. I feel I've had those experiences. I continue to think that many women hide the fact that their problem of the body, it's a major issue, that we often punish ourselves for issues that are purely psychological.
You explained that Women Without Men is not a feminist film, but a film which tries to portray the transformation of women, independent from men. What is your vision of feminism?
Well, I mean, I think that you find a lot of artists who are using women as their main subject, as the main character of their work, a little bit resistant in terms of accepting that, you know, only because I'm working with women topic, therefore I have to be categorized in one way or another. Why men, when they make film about men, they're not categorized as masculinist? Or, you know, I think it's this resistance against categorization. It's not so much because why can't we talk about politics through the experience of women? Why can't we, through the experience of women, deal with issues of religion and society?
Some people who saw the movie, they say the idea of women in the film being victim and the only way of freedom, free themselves from men, is killing themselves, kind of giving up as the only solution, even at the end of the film. What's your response to that?
This kind of response is because the people who make the judgment like that, they're not understanding the allegorical value of this film. That in fact, the death of Muniz is a flight to freedom. And this really connects in my mind directly to our ideas of mysticism, the idea that only in that sense you can be truly free. Of course, we're not talking about humanly death. We're not suggesting that suicide is the way to freedom, because if you rationalize the film in those logic, it doesn't work. But if you understand, and again, it's a magic realism film, that when she flies, she leaps to her death, in fact, she becomes free, and she finally is able to see everything that she never was able to experience in real life. So it's a metaphoric death. And in fact, for me, it's a very optimistic and hopeful film in a way that, you know, suggests the idea that these people took the courage to take on the struggle for look and idea of change. And this cycle continues, that we are very brave people, even if we have to die for our ideals.
Thanks so much to be with us.
Thank you, Nesigen.
Simin Yahagi spoke with Iranian filmmaker Shirin Neshat. Women Without Men is now playing at the Elmwood Theater in Berkeley and the Opera Plaza in San Francisco. You can also learn more about Shirin Neshat by visiting the website womenwithoutmenfilm.com.